All right. Let's find out what's happening in the stars. We welcome Andrew Fracknoy, Professor Fracknoy, an astronomy professor for Foothill College. And I'm going to warn you, for those of you that have never listened to Professor Fracknoy, he's perfect for guys like me because he always speaks in a level, which is fifth grade, so I can understand it. He is great to listen to, and he is a friend. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, and I don't think you should sell yourself short. Sixth grade, at least.
Sixth grade.
Now, so that you know, at Foothill College, students line up to get in his class because you're about to find out why. It's so interesting. Professor, what are you going to update us on today in the stars?
Well, I think we should talk about the mission to Jupiter. There's been much in the news, and it's really quite exciting. We have a brand new spacecraft that has just gone into orbit around the biggest planet in our solar system, Jupiter.
Didn't it take 5 years to get there?
Absolutely. And by the way, it's the fastest vehicle that human beings have ever built. Nothing has moved this fast, and yet it took 5 years to get to Jupiter. And it even needed a little gravity boost from Earth. They brought it around Earth again so it could steal a little bit of energy from the Earth's rotation. And it still took it 5 years to get to Jupiter.
So this thing, what exactly is it going to do now that it's arrived?
Well, this is the interesting part. So we've already had spacecraft around Jupiter, both flybys and an orbiter that called Galileo that's given us a lot of good pictures and information. What we don't know a lot about is what's inside Jupiter. Jupiter is a giant ball of gas and liquid. In fact, if you tried to land on Jupiter, you wouldn't. You just sink in and in and in. Mm. But what it's like inside is very interesting. The pressure of all this material, even though it's gas and liquid, it still has tremendous weight. And so the pressure inside is so great that elements no longer behave the way that they behave on our planet. For example, the simple element hydrogen, which is usually a gas on Earth, becomes a kind of liquid metal inside Jupiter and makes it the biggest magnet of all the planets. So we're going to try to study the magnetic field of Jupiter, the internal structure of Jupiter. It's going to fly over the north and south poles of Jupiter, which we haven't seen very well, and give us our first views of those regions of the planet.
Wow. All right, let me ask a stupid question, which I always do, and thank you for letting me do it. So you said Jupiter is magnetic. Why is this probe not being pulled to its surface?
Well, absolutely a great question. And in fact, we're very worried about
Mark's
this.
Proud.
Because the magnetic field is so strong, it's not so much its pull, but the radiation that results, that's the biggest issue. So because Jupiter is a magnet, it attracts little charged particles. The spacecraft isn't charged, so it's not attracted. But charged or chargeable things get attracted to magnets, and so the environment right around Jupiter is filled with high-energy particles zooming around and really could hurt the electronics of the spacecraft. So we've actually put the brains of the spacecraft inside a half-inch-thick titanium-walled vault so that the brains are separated from the outside instruments and the brains don't get fried when it gets into this radiation zone of Jupiter.
Dr. Fracknoy, is there anything that we're seeing from Jupiter that we could harness or mine, I guess, for lack of a better word, that we could use here?
No, this is Jupiter is really quite far away. If we're going to be mining anything, it's not going to be the moons of Jupiter. It's going to be much more likely a planet like Mars, which is significantly closer to us. But here's the neat part. Jupiter surrounds, although I said Jupiter is not a solid, Jupiter is surrounded by solid moons, and on one of those moons, there's an underground ocean deep under the ice of that moon. We think there's now good evidence that there's a deep ocean inside which there's heat, and so that might actually be a place where life, completely different life from Earth, might have begun millions or billions of years ago, and so that might be an independent place to search for life.
Now, Professor Fracknoy, we've talked about this on many occasions, and I always find it to be a uniquely interesting conversation because our sun is exactly that. It is a star, And our planet is positioned the exact distance needed for an atmosphere. An atmosphere causes life. Now, we know that there's billions and billions of other stars, and it would be ridiculous of us to think that we were the only planet the perfect distance from its star or its sun that would create life. The problem is getting to them. In your mind, will we ever have travel that's fast enough that we can get to alien life form?
Well, ever is a really long time, especially toward the end. So I don't know how to answer that question. But in terms of the recent future, the times that are coming up, probably not. Let me give an example that will help people. The fastest spacecraft that we've built so far, if it were going in the direction of the nearest star, would not take 5 years to get there, but would take 80,000 years to get there. And it's hard to get graduate students to volunteer for that trip. the distance to the stars is truly enormous. So we are thinking not so much of sending spacecraft there, but sending signals at the speed of light. A signal like the radio signal with which we communicate right now with your listeners. That radio signal to or from the stars would get to the nearest star in 4 years. Even my impatient students could wait that long. And so that's the way we think we're going to get in touch with and learn more about what's out there in terms of other forms of life, is to use signals traveling at the speed of light.
Well, that's all well and good and sounds exciting, but after movies like The Matrix and all, I think we could probably be cool just living and not worrying about it, who's coming to get us.
Here's one of my favorite...
That's right. If we have trouble getting to the stars, that's also reassuring in terms of any slobbering evil aliens getting to us. If travel is difficult, that insulates us from anybody like the creatures in Independence Day and so on.
This is one of my favorite fun facts that Professor Fracknoy has shared. From the Big Bang to now, let's say that that's a calendar year. Mm-hmm. From the Big Bang to now is a calendar year. The time that there was life on Earth inside that calendar, the time that there is life of any kind on Earth is basically New Year's Eve.
What?
Isn't that great?
Let's just say large-scale life, because we had small life before that. But if you're looking at life like us, life like our ancestors and like us, yes, it's basically the last few minutes of that calendar year that life like humans could have existed on our planet. And so that's another reason we think it's going to be quite a challenge to find other forms of life. We don't know how early they began. We don't know how long civilizations last. We have to catch them before they destroy themselves. And so this is a big challenge for us. And the thing that makes us optimistic about life out there, though, is the numbers that you began with, that there are billions and billions of stars out there. We're now finding that maybe half of them have planets around them. And so the chances that we'll find somewhere out there another Earth and maybe other listeners to programs like this is getting better all the time.
You've been listening to Professor Andrew Fracknoy, an astronomer at Foothill College. Professor, a pleasure as always.
It's so nice to speak with you.